Okay, so it's quite difficult for us to say precisely what arm's length is. So we tend to focus on what it's not. So a candidate, an evaluator is considered not to be at arm's length of the candidate if they have co-published research papers, book chapters, or conducted other scholarly writing within the last 6 years. Those would be considered collaborators. The exception to that, and this is a case-by-case exception, would be for large consortium papers, so 40 co-authors plus, where the candidates and the evaluators are not listed as first, second, or last authors. If you have any doubts whatsoever about an external evaluator's acceptability, please do contact me or Dr. Fellows or Dr. Schricker. We can all provide a little bit of advice on that. We do not allow current or former thesis or research supervisors, so essentially no relationship that involves a power differential, so mentor mentee, supervisor supervisee, etc. We cannot have students of the candidate or where the candidate was a student of the evaluator, even if it's going back 20 years, have any kind of close personal or professional relationship with the candidate. They may not publish, but they may go skiing together. We've got to avoid things like that. So in the form for external evaluators, there is a section for you to declare any relationship that you have. Generally speaking, more information is better. You don't need to write a narrative, but if you have, let's say you published with this person on a small paper when you were doing your PhD, let us know about that. We'll have a look, and chances are it will be. We do not allow any former or current departmental colleagues in the past 6 years, so no one who is currently or recently a McGill employee, no co-PIs, co-joint recipients, etc. It's not an exhaustive list, so please, if you have any questions about external evaluators, we're more than happy to dig in and see what we can find. So just to kind of re-emphasize, try to have between 10 and 12 available. Submit us the best eight. And that way we can adjust quickly if we need to. Okay, and we proceeded through that a little bit quicker than I thought we would. So we can open up to any questions at this point. Dr. Schricker, if you have anything else that you want to add from the department perspective around that, please go right ahead.
No, nothing specific, but I think you illustrated very well that this is a formal process taken very seriously by the faculty, and particularly for promotion to full professor. It's a real package with a lot of steps, and I think that's important to appreciate. It doesn't mean that promotions from assistant to associate are less serious, but a little bit less complicated, I think, based on my experience.
For sure.
And you know, the gist really for promotions from associate to full professor is the international recognition. That's what we
Exactly.
really always focus. Once you reached associate professor level, you already showed excellence in two out of three categories. So the next step is really the international recognition that's sometimes difficult to prove, but that's what the focus is really on.
Sure, and invited presentations, conference organization, things like that, where you've been asked to kind of present to that larger community, that's definitely good evidence of international recognition. So if I was going to give a piece of advice is to keep your CV updated, particularly your teaching portfolio, as Dr. Schricker mentioned earlier, and kind of update any talks, maybe on a yearly basis or 6 monthly basis, depending on how active you are. And that will make the whole process a lot easier when you do actually come up for that promotion to full professor because everything has been documented.
Years ago, I actually had a diary, recording, putting down every resident I was working with for a few years, every medical student, just to show quantity, not necessarily quality, but it's not a lot of work really to keep track of these things, and it really helps to show what you've been doing actually. Keep your 145 evaluations, keep the performance evaluations that you do every year with the site director or me. Anything that is proof of, you know, evidence of teaching, and that's usually the category people can use, is very useful and important. So are there any questions in the audience? So the big question is, and that has been discussed at the faculty level at committee meetings a lot, you know, what is excellence? And it's like the old saying that I can't define excellence, but I know it when I see it, right? And that's why we have this committee, which, you know, with members of some experience, and it's very hard to really put it in on paper, you know, what is excellence. But I think we can differentiate between, or we can use some absolute and some relative indicators of excellence. So if you win the Nobel Prize, I think that's a pretty good indicator for excellence. Or if you have a CIHR grant, that's, you know, very objective. Or if you've been, for example, Teacher of the Year from the Canadian Society of Anesthesiologists, these are clear indicators of excellence, I think. These are easy, but not everybody wins a Nobel Prize. So we can also use some relative indicators. And you know, again, I can't put numbers on it, but for example, if you have a department of 20 people and three or four people publish papers in this department, I think to reach excellence in research, you should be one of those four. So it's not carved in stone, or it's not there. It's not really clear what excellent is, but we can certainly use some indicators within our own specialty, within our own department. And that's why it's why Craig mentioned this, the importance of external evaluators. You know, then we have also relative indicators from other departments across the world, what they would feel about a candidate, and how would they deal with the candidate or with the promotion in their own respective institutions. And for teaching, obviously, as we mentioned, the 145 is an objective criterion that can be used to define excellence in teaching.
So I just have a little comment and question. I mean, I went through this process, but more importantly, I think philosophically, as a faculty, I think we need to kind of make this whole process something that people strive to do, especially with a lot of junior members that we have in our department. And, you know, I work at the Jewish, I don't know everybody on the screen, but I think it's important for us to be aware of what's going on at the faculty so that we all belong to a kind of a greater collective. And I think we're all in our own silos, and a lot of us, especially in the different clinical realm, don't really know what everybody else is doing. I mean, in the past, when I did my fellowship elsewhere, you know, there's continuous communication within departments where, let's say on a monthly basis, we know what everybody's publishing, we know milestones that people are achieving, we understand what everybody, you know, people are retiring, people are being hired, and you see how these departments are changing on a regular basis. And yet, you know, 25 years later, I've been here for 25 years, you hardly really know, apart from the Harold Griffith and the Wesley Bourne meetings, where we kind of do a mise à jour of what everything's going on, we don't have a continuous feel as to what's going on within the faculty. So I think these promotions are things are fantastic. I think it's important to help the young members of our faculty interested in research and everything that they're doing, but also not to feel that this is such an ominous process. And I think we need to not only have people ask for promotions, but to promote people, to help people to accomplish these goals. And having been at Yale when I was younger, there were people in charge of helping this process. It isn't just you decide you want to do it and you just go about it and fill it out and then end up having, being accepted or not. There's actually a desire for people to promote members of their own departments and members of the faculty. So if I have one comment, it's to say maybe we should have a formal newsletter every month so that everybody, the clinicians, the researchers, everybody knows what everybody else is doing so that we don't all live in our own little silos and not understand what's going on. We want to all be proud to be part of the McGill community and the McGill faculty. But I find that, especially here at the Jewish, but I'm sure it's not different anywhere else. I think that's not being done. And that's my comment after having been here for a few years.
Thanks, Igal. I couldn't agree more what you just said. Couple of comments. Obviously, the Wesley Bourne and Harold Griffith lectures gave us an opportunity to promote the department and create that feeling of family and accomplishment. Obviously, in the last couple of years, we couldn't do that, but I certainly gave always a little presentation on the accomplishments in the departments within the last year. That didn't happen in the last couple of years, but I'm very pleased to tell you that right now I'm working on an annual report, something like a newsletter, as you suggested, summarizing accomplishments, changes at every site, every clinical site. And I hope to be able to distribute that in February or in March. So I received information from the Jewish already, from the Neuro. I'm just waiting for some reports from the Anesthesia Research Unit, from the Pain Clinic, the MGH, and the RVH and the Children's. But that will happen soon, Igal, and I'm very happy to do that because I totally agree. It's very important to do these things and to communicate accomplishments and achievements. And because we're such a rich department and such a academically such a successful department as well, I totally agree with that. And that will also include reports on promotions. I communicated that usually at the Wesley Bourne or the Harold Griffith in the fall. But very important comments.
Just a quick note, I dropped a link in the chat. The university provides a information session on promotion to full professors. It's February 11th. The Zoom link is in the chat below. So if you wish to, please go ahead and view that as well.
Welcome, Leslie. We already started the question period. There's not a lot of questions. I'm not sure if that's a good sign, but do you have any comments about the promotion process?
Well, maybe just to pick up on the discussion we were just having, to me, the promotions process is just kind of like the final step, right? The important thing is to help people use the structures of what is it that promotions committees are looking at to organize their career activities, their academic work, so that it will align with the expectations and they can be recognized for their accomplishments and their progress. So that's just to pick up on what Igal was saying, it's a good idea, no matter where you are in your career, to have a look at and understand what is assessed, understanding that it's flexible and sort of set to address the fact that across the whole faculty, there's a really wide diversity of academic activities and they're all, valued, so that you can organize what you're doing from an academic perspective to then be recognized. I think the thing that I see sometimes is people late in their career who've contributed a lot, but they've done it in a way that's sort of disconnected from the university's framework. And then it's hard for us to recognize those achievements in these formal ways. So it's in everyone's interest to align these things. And one of the ways you can do that is, of course, by engaging with promotion, but the other is just in the annual performance evaluations and other steps. Departments often have mentorship committees, or you can seek informal mentorship from people who've been through the process already in your department or from a member of your departmental promotions committee to really make sure you understand what's involved, and not so much in the promotion step, but in your career development. So I guess I would hope that you would see it that way and not as somehow this kind of bureaucratic thing. It's there for at the end to formally recognize in a fairly coherent and consistent way across the whole Faculty of Medicine, so not just department by department. But the main point is to back up and kind of launch your career direction in a way that's going to align with those expectations. That's good for you, and it's also good for the faculty in the university, because it means your efforts and your work are going to be higher impact, because you know you need to, for example, to have peer-reviewed evidence of your accomplishments, or that your teaching evaluations matter, or that, you know, these things will help you, but they'll also improve the overall department's sort of prominence and so on. So there's kind of win-win for people to get involved with the academic framework. So I encourage you to do so. At all levels, people are ready to answer questions and help you with that. And the annual evaluation, so-called, or annual performance dialogue, is a time to kind of, it's a good time to be discussing it here today, because that's upcoming. It's a good time to seek advice on that with your own portfolio or your own CV, and sitting down with someone who has in your department who has experience with the process and can answer your personal specific questions about what you should do to, you know, to make sure that the work you're doing is sort of highest impact.
Maybe another comment about the process. Even if, you know, you're rejected or your application is rejected at any level, that doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't retry. I certainly was rejected the first time when I applied, and it's not nice, but it's you know, it's not the end of the process, and I would really encourage everybody to keep trying and keep going, because it's usually not a contentual problem. It's more often, as I said before, there are formatting issues. There's a, you know, you need a formal statement about your teaching. I think that's important. It's not just sending in 1 for 5 copies. So there's a bit more to that. But keep trying. And so far we had a lot of success actually over the last 6 years.
I don't know how, of course, I missed the beginning, so I'm not sure what you actually said, but I wonder if there's any questions about the clinical innovation aspect, which is a fairly new feature of the promotions kind of framework that was specifically brought in to make sure we were able to better recognize what clinical faculty are often doing, and it was not necessarily falling in the traditional research sense.
Greg alluded to it a little bit, but what Craig said, it needs, like any clinical innovation, if not published, is maybe not as valid and valuable. I'm not so sure about that. I think it's up to the committee also and us at a departmental level to point things out and emphasize things. And even though they're not published, and you know, a lot of clinical innovation that is being implemented is actually not published. So I think it's up to the committee also to point out, you know, how, the importance of any of these activities.
So for sure, we're interested in what the department committee thinks about what's going on. That's why that's the first step, because they have the closest sort of sense of things. But the it's not so much whether it's published. It's whether it's clinical innovation that's reaching beyond the walls of your own institution or your own unit, and that it's recognized by your peers. So publication is an obvious way to be. Peer reviewed publications are like a straightforward way to demonstrate that your work is being recognized as a contribution by your peers. But there are other ways to do that. And the kind of evidence we look for example, would be that you're being invited to speak about this innovation and you have some new approach to whatever nerve block or something, and you're being asked to come and talk about it in other institutions, or maybe you were asked to contribute to clinical guidelines or to a training program at the Canadian whatever of nerve block experts to teach others your new technique. So those would be examples of peer recognition of your innovation. It's a little different than saying in my own clinic, you know, I figured out a better way to move patients through more quickly with higher satisfaction. If all I have to say for that is that I did it and I think that the patients are more satisfied, even though it may in fact be a contribution, it doesn't count for promotion because you can't really validate it externally. So if you did that and you do think it's working better, all you have to do is just the next little step to, I don't know, do a little quality improvement, assessment, and then publish or at least speak about the findings outside your own local environment to sort of establish that what you're doing is something that other people are interested in and find valuable. And to come back to my first point, one of the reasons for provoking you to do that is that it causes the work that you're doing to have a wider impact. So it's a way to kind of encourage you to do more than just innovate locally in your own office or your own practice, to indeed do what we hope people are going to do in academic medical centers and improve care, improve processes, but then have that have a wider impact by communicating it more widely. And that's good for your promotion because it'll show that your impact is peer, recognized beyond the walls of your own local center. But it's also good for your faculty and your university and your department because you're famous for your nerve block method now with your name attached to it and the McGill whatever. So it's good for the whole collective when people are provoked to do just that next step, encouraged to do the next step to take whatever they're working on to the wider scholarly or clinical community.
The clinical innovation part is very good to have now. I don't know when it was implemented, but it's a few years ago. And that separates, the promotion process for clinicians or CAS, you call them, contract academic staff, from tenure track scientists are researchers.
No, clinical innovation is, in principle, could be recognized in a tenure track. It's just that it typically captures the type of work that is more commonly done by like a wider proportion, let's say, of the clinical faculty. There's not some distinction on the tenure track. It's just that people on tenure track are more commonly doing more conventional research with that fits better with the university's well-established framework for assessing research or that kind of scholarly work.
No, it's not a formal separation, but it's a practical separation, and well, it gives clinicians more opportunity than it used to be.
Right, we're attempting to be more comprehensive, I guess. But there is a need for individuals to think about how their activities can align with promotions frameworks, as well as on our side, trying to optimize how those frameworks are organized so they recognize quality academic work. So you can't just expect that because you're doing it, it's going to be recognized. We're trying to make the framework work well for clinical faculty, but clinical faculty have to meet us halfway and make sure that what they're doing does take the steps that are needed to really establish that it's excellent and peer recognized. The energy levels are high this morning.
No, it's already 8:24. People have to go into the operating room. So if are there any more questions, I don't think so, but I think we exhausted it and it was very useful. Thank you very much, Craig and Leslie, for your presence. And I hope to send out the newsletter soon.
We look forward to seeing lots of interesting dossiers from the Department of Anesthesia at the Faculty Promotions Committee.
Well, we had a few in the fall. We submitted a few. I think some of them are already positive, so I don't have official.
Yeah, we can't say officially, but things look hopeful.
Great. Okay, thanks. And thanks, Christina. Thanks, Franca. Thanks, guys, and have a good day. Bye-bye.